herd immunity. That has been the stated goal from very early on in the pandemic. It's the tipping point where enough of us are protected from the coronavirus to allow all of us safely to resume some normal life. But is herd immunity attainable? Will enough people get vaccinated? Will travel patterns expand and contract what the herd is? Will disparities in who has access to vaccines locally, globally, keep moving the target? And what does that mean for who's safe, how, and when right here at home? We have questions, and we know you do too, so let's ask the doctors. What do you need to know this week about the coronavirus, vaccines, safe behaviors, indoors and outdoors? 800-423-8255 is the number. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us today, we have Dr. Joshua Barocas, infectious disease physician at the Boston Medical Center and assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine, and Dr. Cassandra Pierre, acting hospital epidemiologist and an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center, an assistant professor at the Boston University School of Medicine. Doctors Barocas, Pierre, welcome back. Thank you.
Yeah,
lovely to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Pierre, was herd immunity ever actually possible?
Well, at some point, it did seem like it would be attainable when we thought that we needed maybe 60 to 70% of people to be vaccinated to attain it. Those margins, those numbers changed, as you mentioned, with variants that made the virus more highly transmissible. But to be honest, I think there's always been this concern that we would have uneven vaccination right here in the United States, where we have had disparities in rollout. Lack of access, especially to the hardest hit communities, those with more structurally marginalized individuals, and then globally, because what's global affects us locally. If the rest of the world is not expecting to get their first vaccines, or the majority of countries are not expected to get their first vaccines by 2022, then variants of concern will be continuing and threatening our vaccine and naturally derived immunity here in the United States. So it was a beautiful thing to look forward to. But unfortunately, the patterns of infection and the uneven distribution of this vaccine has really imperiled, not completely eradicated that dream.
So Dr. Barocas, should it no longer be the goal?
You know, I think that Americans generally need something. Something to hang our hat on, something to work for, toward. I think that the goal really should be protecting as many people from serious illness as we can. And that means striving for some amount of herd immunity, but also, and I think more importantly, we have, as Dr. Pierre said, I think we have to come to terms with the fact that we now have an endemic virus, and an endemic virus meaning something that we just live with, like the flu, that we may need updated vaccines, boosters, et cetera. And my concern, honestly, is that with endemic viruses, with endemic diseases, as Dr. Pierre said, it is the structurally marginalized. It's what we would call the global South that end up being the hardest hit, where the mortality and the morbidity are the most impactful, where there can be just vast economic devastation. And so I think that our goal really should be looking globally right now as how we can decrease the amount of essentially destruction that we have going on.
All right, we have lots of calls coming in. I'd like to go ahead and get started taking some of those. 1-800-423-8255 to ask Doctors Pierre and Barocas your questions. We have Danielle on the line from Brighton. Danielle, what's your question?
Hi. Now that I am fully vaccinated and 2 weeks out post-inoculation, can I stop wearing double masks, or do I need to keep wearing them?
Dr. Pierre.
That's a great question, Danielle. You know, recently there has been some questions about double masking in terms of its actual protection. And we're seeing that, you know, it really depends on the kind of double masking you're doing. I would actually just forego talking about double masking in general and say that the rates of transmission and COVID positivity in our community, in the Commonwealth, in New England, have decreased significantly. The amount of people that we are seeing vaccinated in our area although again, not achieving herd immunity, has increased significantly. And so I do not think that people need to double mask at this point, especially as we talk about things like foregoing or ending the mask mandates when going out in non-congested areas. I don't think it's necessary at this point. And many people, unfortunately, may have been double masking in ways that may not have actually been as protective as they thought.
So, Dr. Barocas, the next question comes from Maggie in Brookline, and Maggie wants to know about if first doses Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and then later, if boosters are required, A, can you get an mRNA booster, so meaning, for example, Moderna and Pfizer, and if so, would that make a difference?
Ooh, such a good question. to Maggie, I'm glad that you got something. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is an excellent vaccine that I think has gone through very rigorous testing. And as everyone knows, there was a pause on the rollout because of concerns of some increase in blood clots. But right now we are recommending, and I just say this so that everyone knows, we are recommending that whatever vaccine is available to you, that you take. There are vaccine clinics throughout the Commonwealth right now, and everyone who's an adult is eligible. Now, as far as boosters, a great question. We don't know right this second who's going to, if we're going to need boosters. And so it's a little premature to answer the question of boosting with, if you got Johnson & Johnson, whether you can boost with an mRNA vaccine like the Moderna or Pfizer or vice versa. Little early to tell. So I can't answer that right now, but I think that data will be forthcoming as far as whether or not we're going to need boosting.
1-800-423-8255 to ask a question of your own. We've got Quinn on the line in Brockton. Quinn, go ahead.
Hi, I missed my second dose of the vaccine voluntarily because I had an important event on the time that I was supposed to get my second vaccine. I do work with special needs kids, and I know that it's important to get my second vaccine. Is it still okay that I've missed the time frame?
Quinn, which vaccine, please? Do you know? Do you remember?
Moderna.
Thanks. Dr. Pierre?
Quinn, thank you for calling in with this question. I think many people are in this situation where they've either delayed or missed their second dose. And we are highly encouraging of people going and getting their second dose. Many people are saying, or the experts are saying, between 8 to, even if it's within 8 to 12 weeks of the time that you were supposed to get your second dose, that you should expect to have really great efficacy with that second dose, even if it is delayed. So yes, I would highly encourage you to get that second dose to get better optimal protection for yourself and for the people that you take care of.
And Dr. Pierre, I can just imagine a listener out there saying, okay, what if for me it was, let's say, 16 weeks?
I would still recommend, now the evidence, we don't have evidence to say necessarily what percentage of the full efficacy you would get in taking your vaccine at 16 weeks after, you were scheduled to have taken it. But yes, I would still recommend doing it. It would still provide a boosting phenomena. So yes, please get it.
All right, let's take another call here. We have Dottie on the line in Merrimack, New Hampshire. Dottie, go ahead with your question.
Hi. This is Dottie. I have a question because both my husband and I had COVID itself, the disease, in January, and we're now recovered from it. And we're getting conflicting answers from our doctors when we talk to them about whether we also get the vaccine, because we were told that we have the natural immunity for eight months. Okay, my sister-in-law also had COVID, and she did get the vaccine. She had a terrible reaction to it. So I don't want that. So give me your thoughts, please.
Dr. Barocas, can we turn to you for Dottie?
Yeah, Dottie, I'm sorry to hear that that you were sick. I'm glad that you and your husband are doing well and recovered right now. So for people that have had COVID. And you're right, it was confusing. It is confusing. We were saying things earlier when we didn't really have a ton of vaccine available, and that was the reason for maybe waiting. At this point, you're fully recovered. You should absolutely go get the vaccine, whether it's the Johnson & Johnson or the Moderna or the Pfizer. Now, the second part of your question, it's important for us to be honest here. One of the things is that, especially in people who have had COVID, you might not feel so good after one of your vaccines, either if you get the Johnson & Johnson, the one shot, or if you get the Moderna or Pfizer after both of them. You might have a sore arm. You might have, cold and flu-like symptoms that usually last no more than 24 hours. I can tell you that in my case, for instance, I didn't feel so great after my second dose of the Pfizer vaccine. I felt like maybe I had a little bit of the flu. That said, all of that passes. And whereas you are definitely still at risk for COVID, getting it again at some point, and this will certainly lessen the effects. So I would say you are definitely eligible. And if you feel bad after the vaccine, you have my deepest condolences. I'm so sorry, but I do know that's generally how some people feel.
Thanks for that, Dr. Barocas. We have more calls, so let's just stay with them. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your vaccine and coronavirus questions. We have Kathleen on the line in Shrewsbury. Kathleen, go ahead.
Hi. My nephew has a history of blood clots, and he's now on Eliquis. Would that be better for him then to get the Johnson & Johnson if he's already on Eliquis, or should he go for the other two instead?
Dr. Pierre, and let's broaden that for people with histories of blood clots. How should they think about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine?
Yeah, that's a really important thing to talk about. The interesting thing about Johnson & Johnson and the people, the 15 or potentially more people that have experienced those rare complications that we think about when we think about the pause that happened with Johnson & Johnson, the cerebral venous thrombosis, is that they didn't actually see any of those individuals having underlying histories of predisposition to clotting. And the other thing that's important, specifically for Kathleen, is that we did not see men post-trial develop these rare kinds of blood clots. So I think there is kind of a decision tree to make for people who are men or women over the age of 50, whether they have clotting disorder or not. We're not really seeing an increased risk for these cases, these rare complications of COVID, of the blood clotting with Johnson & Johnson. And for women who are less than 50, that's where we are seeing some of these events. They are incredibly rare. The risk of COVID-19 related blood clots or, hospitalization, severe complications of COVID-19 and death still outweigh the risks of those complications. That being said, we do have these other choices for women under the age of 50, should they wish to choose another option, the mRNA vaccines, which are not associated with these rare conditions. So all in all, just to answer the question, individuals who have an underlying clotting disorder are not believed, based on the data that we have, to have an increased risk of clotting because of taking the Johnson & Johnson. But that being said, we always have options. So this is a conversation that I always recommend people have with a doctor that they trust, with a medical provider that they trust, to go through this a little bit more. But as far as the data, we are not seeing any increased risk of clotting with that.
And Dr. Pierre, to be clear, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there at the end. To be clear, there's a new study out from the University of Oxford that found that the risk of clotting is 8 to 10 times higher from having COVID-19 than from getting it from a vaccine. Is that your understanding of the new research?
That's correct. We are seeing increased risk of, and we've known this for quite some time, that COVID-19 is associated with abnormal clotting complications, including that rare complication of the cerebral venous thrombosis. We are not entirely seeing the entire syndrome that we saw with Johnson & Johnson, which is having that rare clotting, that unusual location for clotting with low platelet counts. So that's an important consideration to make. It is rare, you know, we're not seeing that, but we are definitely seeing increased clotting, and we're also seeing an increased amount of all the complications people have been worried about the vaccines, which are not related to the vaccines, for example, issues with pregnancy loss, issues with longstanding complications. There are so many more reasons to be concerned about COVID-19, a laundry list, when we are seeing very, very rare complications in the double digits with the COVID-19 vaccines.
Let's go to Mary in Salem. Mary, what's your question?
Yeah, I haven't gotten the vaccine yet because I'm leery of it, because I had an adverse reaction to an MRI contrast dye gadolinium. So do you think you can convince me to get the vaccine?
Oh, Dr. Brokus, it's on.
Mary, I can absolutely turn on the charm. Hopefully that helps. I think that the most important point that Dr. Pierre just brought up, as clinicians, both of us, and I don't want to speak for Dr. Pierre, but we are very close colleagues. We have seen just the absolute devastation front and center that the virus can cause. And we have donned our PPE, we've reused our masks, we've been at the bedside with families, and it is absolutely devastating. I 100% understand that people are, like you, are leery of the vaccine, and there are a lot of questions out there. I can say that this is something that I have gotten myself, that I have I recommend for my mother and my father, who I like and I love. So I want them to get it. I wanted them to get it, and they got it. It's something that I trust. You and I don't know each other, but the potential side effects in a monitored setting of the vaccine, which can happen but are very, very rare, are much more rare, and B, much less devastating than the higher risk and the potential higher severity of COVID-19 disease itself. I know that there's a lot of questions, there are a lot of things, different sources of information floating out there, but my true, truly, I would want nothing more than for you or any family member of mine to be protected, so that we don't have to keep going through what Dr. Pierre and I have seen at the bedside.
Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Brokus. We will not have time to get to more calls, although the lines were full. Listeners, you know we will do this again. Dr. Pierre, lightning round, one sentence. One caller did ask a question we've been hearing a lot. If I don't have a side effect from the vaccine, does that mean it didn't work?
Absolutely not.
There you go. Yeah, I love the good one sentence answer. All right, that is Dr. Cassandra Pierre, acting hospital epidemiologist and infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center, and Dr. Joshua Brokus, an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center as well. They're both on faculty at Boston University School of Medicine. Thank you both of you for the generosity of your time and your information today. We appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
And listeners, that is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Janie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Wuthman. And we have help from Stephen Gelman and Hafsa Qureshi. Our engineer today is Marquise Neal. Our executive producer is Satesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Great to talk to you. Thank you for calling and listening. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.